Here on Radio 4 FM, it's our Book of the Week about the life of the musician Robert Wyatt. He's the drummer and singer for The Soft Machine. But all things must come to an end. After that, it's solo work and a fateful party in London, Indifferent Every Time, by Marcus O'Dea.
Jimi Hendrix invited The Soft Machine as support for an ambitious US tour in January 1968. A British a-coming welcome party was held for them in Manhattan. They arrived on top of the Pan Am building, recalled jazz writer Mike Zwerin, which still had a helipad. All the music press was up there in the lounge, and the helicopter lands and they come off. And what a sight that was. First of all, Hendrix by himself, and then the Soft Machine with their big furry coats and long hair. That was amazing. It would be amazing, too, for the Soft Machine, who were unknown in the US. Sharing bills with the Jimi Hendrix Experience, they were able to reach a huge new audience. However, it felt like a very strange accident. "It was just something we happened to fall into," recalled Kevin Ayers. "Hendrix happened to like us because we were weird. We were just little amateur musicians from Canterbury who'd never had a proper sound check." As a drummer, Robert Wyatt was coming into his own, in part influenced by Mitch Mitchell. Night after night, he watched the experienced bassist Noel Redding anchor the groove, while Mitchell followed Hendrix as closely as a sidecar. Robert relished his time on the road, partying across the states, enjoying the emerging rock and roll lifestyle. At this stage, he had an accomplice in excess. Girls lining up outside the door, free drink everywhere, is how Ayers recalled the tour. Mark Boyle and Joan Hills would go through customs separately from the rest of the band. "I had short hair," Boyle recalled. "So we'd be straight through customs and we'd sit for an hour in the coffee bar waiting for them. Robert had, very wisely, painted his suitcase bright yellow, which was funny, but he also had a yellow suit made out of a curtain that Pam had done for him with red lining. He was picked out all the time." Off the back of the American tour, the Soft Machine secured a two-album deal with Probe and was able to record the first of these in New York's state-of-the-art Record Plant studio. It is Wyatt, singing the majority of tracks, who comes across as the band's dominant personality. The Soft Machine also showcases Wyatt's burgeoning writing talent. As a pun-loving drummer and singer, without access to a harmony instrument, lyrics were a natural interest. "Why Am I So Short" was based on a melody by Hugh Hopper. "I'm nearly 5'7" tall. I like to smoke and drink and ball. I've got a yellow suit that's made by Pam, and every day I like an egg and some tea. But most of all, I like to talk about me." It was on their second Hendrix tour that Kevin tired of the girls and the booze. "I went on a very strict macrobiotic diet," he recalled. "Mike Ratledge read books, while I used to lie on the floor and stare at the ceiling." Robert, by contrast, continued to bask in life on the road. "It was grueling," he grins, "but I was what, 25? You can really just live on chutzpah." One of his favourite watering holes was New York club The Scene. "Keith Moon really taught me how to get drunk fast. Getting on stage in front of 5,000 impatient Texans waiting for Hendrix to come on, you do need a drink." Robert spent more and more time with members of the Jimi Hendrix Experience. After a final show at California's Hollywood Bowl was cancelled due to Robert dropping a cymbal on his foot, the Soft Machine imploded. Mike returned to London, while Kevin sold his bass and headed for the Balearic Sun. Robert returned to England at the tail end of 1968 and proposed marriage to Pam. The wedding took place at Brixton Registry Office on the 28th of January 1969, Wyatt's 24th birthday. Probe, to everyone's surprise, decided to take up their option on a second Soft Machine album. Kevin Ayres was away in Ibiza, and Hugh Hopper, who had written several numbers still in the repertoire, was the natural replacement for Volume 2. Kevin's departure left Robert as sole vocalist, and Dada Was Here even found him singing in Spanish. Later, in April and May 1970, Soft Machine went into London's IBC studios to record Third. Though it is a double LP, Third contains just four tracks, each taking up an entire side of vinyl. No subsequent album would feature singing at all, as the band's centre of gravity shifted towards jazz rock. Photographs of the era show the rest of the band hunched over sheet music while Robert hammers away on drums with no manuscript paper or shirt in sight. He refused to learn to read music, he later suggested, so the rest of the band couldn't tell him what to play. Third would become Soft Machine's best-selling record. Behind the scenes, however, Robert felt he was being squeezed out of his own group in a jazz rock coup d'etat. It wasn't only within Soft Machine that things were going wrong for Robert. In April 1970, Pam left him for drummer Pip Pyle. During one evening of drunkenness at Ronnie Scott's, Hugh Hopper recalls, he said to someone, "I wish I could find another band." The rest of us leapt on it and said, "Right, go on then." By autumn 1970, the split was official, with Melody Maker carrying the front page headline, "Wyatt quits Softs." However, Robert wasn't really quitting the Softs. He was pushed, and the sense of rejection was crushing. Matching Moles' London debut was on the 23rd of January 1972 at the Roundhouse. "I saw this beautiful girl," Wyatt recalls. "She was doing smart little foot moves, how you dance if you're in a crowded soul club. Very cool, very hip, and very beautiful." The girl was Alfreda Benge, known to all as Alfie. "You know how you can share the world with somebody?" asks Wyatt rhetorically. "It just completely doubles what you see. Everything opens out and you're not alone." As her friend, the actress Julie Christie, tells it, "I looked out of the window once before I met her and saw this vision. Long blonde hair, wonderful colours, just a little bit ahead of everybody else, walking up the street. I thought, oh, wow." When Alfie met Robert, she had just emerged from a decade of study at three consecutive art schools. She had also been teaching film at art college, but gave that up to join Matching Mole in the tour bus. "She came on the road with us and made us pumpernickel sandwiches, Central European that she is," grins Robert. The director, Nick Rogue, offered Alfie work on the movie Don't Look Now. Just after Christmas 1972, Robert and Alfie joined Julie Christie in a villa on the Venetian island of Giudecca. "I remember the two of them just sitting on a bench for hours and hours and hours," Julie Christie said, "just looking out at the water, while Robert got, as Alfie said, watery ideas." These watery ideas came together on a cheap Riviera keyboard with a slow, shimmering vibrato, bought by Alfie from a local music shop. June Campbell Cramer, or Lady June, was an artist and poet, today best remembered for her West London flat. On the 1st of June 1973, Robert and Alfie attended a birthday party at June's flat. Robert knocked back wine, whiskey, and punch. He fell from a fourth-floor window. There's no concept of falling. I remember hearing, in the distance, a scream, like a wolf's howl. I remember being bundled into an ambulance. Anyway, then 6 weeks later I wake up and I'm in a hospital bed. The impact had broken his 12th vertebra, and as a result, he was paralysed from the waist down. In a somber echo of his father's multiple sclerosis, he would be in a wheelchair for life, at the age of 28. Alfie remembers he was incredibly brave. He seemed to accept it straight away. When he was allowed to take short trips around the hospital in a wheelchair, he found the visitors' room piano. Wyatt began to develop the material he had first sketched out in Venice. Without access to recording facilities, he committed the whole thing to memory. Robert's options had been cruelly narrowed, but he realized he could still play any instrument that required only the top half of the body. In a way, it was fantastically liberating. I had to sit down and think, do your own thing. The generosity of friends saw them through. Pink Floyd, boosted into the A-League with The Dark Side of the Moon, played 2 benefit shows and raised £10,000. Jean Shrimpton donated her old car to them. Julie Christie bought them a flat in Lebanon Park, Twickenham. Before they got the keys to the flat, however, they holed up in Wiltshire on a farm estate owned by Spanish philanthropist Delfina Entrecanales. It was there that Robert began to adjust to life in a wheelchair, and in February 1974 began to record the music he'd written in Venice and Stoke Mandeville Hospital. It was an album that would demand new methods of working. Robert contributed hand percussion using a tea tray and a toy drum, and on Alifib he constructed a subtle percussion part simply from the sound of his own breathing. Otherwise, apart from a little guitar on A Last Straw, he restricted his instrumental contributions to piano and the Riviera organ, leaving himself free to concentrate on singing. On A Last Straw, Robert did his best impression of a horn solo, complete with opening and closing mute. There were straight lyrics, as well as voice as instrument scats. A sense of focus ran through the whole writing and recording process. It was Alfie who suggested the album title, Rock Bottom, and who played a key part in negotiating a record deal on the new Virgin label, force of circumstance pushing her into managing Robert. Robert asked Alfie to design a front cover, and from this point on, she would be responsible for the artwork of every record Robert released. Rock Bottom was released by Virgin on the 26th of July 1974, a day Robert chose because it was the anniversary of the opening salvo of the Cuban Revolution. As if the occasion wasn't momentous enough, Robert married Alfie the same day in Sheen Registry Office.
Julian Rintout reading from Different Every Time by Marcus O'Dair. It was produced by Duncan Minchell. More tomorrow at the same time. After the news, the dancer Michaela De Prince, new screening tests for babies and women's magazines. It's all on Women's Hour with Jenny in a couple of minutes.
5 short stories by Hilary Mantel.
Sometimes my father would send me home by myself, saying he must catch up on paperwork. The brown dinner, which my mother was keeping hot for him, would shrivel to a stain in its oven-proof dish.
Rebecca Staton and Harriet Walter read from a new collection for BBC Radio 4's Book at Bedtime.
I closed the hall door and melted into the oppressive hush. The air conditioner rattled away like an old relative with a loose cough.
Stories from The Assassination of Margaret Thatcher. Every night this week at 10:45 and then on the Radio 4 website.